We said, you know, this doesn't disqualify you.
Should I start?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do, make your first slide as introduction.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mohammed Altaba. I'm an intern here with Peoria County Health Department in the Epidemiology and Clinical Services. Can everybody please introduce themselves, the organization, and if there's any updates from your organization?
I'm Andy Roberts. I'm the administrative assistant here, and I'm here to take notes.
I'm Ben Crocombe with City of Peoria Grants. No updates from us.
I'm Doug Gay with the Peoria County Sheriff's Office.
Rhonda Dutton, Peoria County Sheriff's Office.
Carrie Beats from Tampa County Health Department.
I'm Katie Andrews here with the Peoria City County Health Department. A few updates. We have Mohammed this summer, who's an MPH intern, so he's been doing a lot of our Narcan data analysis and also doing some comparisons with our mortality data as well, so he'll present that this morning. Also, our MAT clinic that we're starting has been pushed back again because our contract with Heartland's not yet finalized, so we're hoping to start that by the end of July.
I'm Sue Tisdale. I work for Unity Place, actually out of the Rochelle location under a drug overdose prevention program grant, covering over 40 counties, training and distributing Narcan and educating and bringing awareness to substance abuse and overdose.
I'm Chris Schaffner with Unity Place as well. I'm also with Total Harm Reduction.
Melissa Hensold, I'm a social worker here at the Health Department.
Thank you, everyone. We'll start with that. These are the reporting organizations that reported to us this month. Some didn't have any, but like still they all reported to us. So we had a total of 66 Narcan reversals this month, which is 60% increase compared to last month, and we had a total of 240 up to this point in 2019. So as you can see here, the surge in May compared to all other months this year, and even some of last year's month. Here's by age group, so you can see the 30 to 39 age group has a high increase of 24 cases, and of those 24, actually 11 happened on the same day. It was May 25th, 11 from 30 to 39 were administered Narcan at the same time. And here by demographics, males more than females for both months, but like for May it's like 70 to 30%. By race, you can see the increase in African Americans from 0.34 per 1,000 to 0.68 per 1,000 population in this month. Here you can see the increase also in each county. So Tazewell County has decreased, but Peoria County from 28 last month to 47 this month, and the rate of 0.25 per 1,000. Zip codes are the same that usual increases, 03 and the 04, and the 05 is the same almost as last month, but 03 is doubled, almost more than doubled, and the 04 also more than doubled.
What's 61523?
Chillicothe. And here some of outside of Peoria and Tazewell. We had from Woodford counties, LaSalle County, Rock Island County, Paulina County. Here are the responding zip codes for agency that administered Narcan that month. We see like the huge difference to last month and this month in Peoria County. So here you see the agencies, per agency, we see the Peoria Fire and AMT administered, so 20 for the Peoria Fire and 11 for AMT this month compared to only 7 and 5 last month. So this is a big increase. Also we had report from Peoria Heights that administered one, this is the first time they report to us.
May 1, where there were 11 Narcan reversals, was it summer camp?
It was the 25th of Saturday.
25th Saturday, but like it was different. I tried to see if they were the same zip code, they were different zip codes actually.
Okay, that's probably why the AMT is high, because they
Oh, okay. So here are some additional variables. 60% of Narcan administration resulted in successful reversal. Only 2 had cardiac arrest, 30 repeated users, and 14 respiratory arrest. Any questions?
Other than summer camp, was there anything else that happened that month that people think contributed to the data?
I think
14 of the reversals
May 25th.
11 of them were in that
age group.
39
Yeah. Well, I tried to see if there's any link to location and stuff, but like there were different locations, but you can see that probably because of summer camp too.
Let me break down on whether or not it was cocaine laced with fentanyl or meth. We're seeing peer reports of cocaine and meth laced with fentanyl.
So I looked into the mortality report actually of last year. It's still mostly opiates, and cocaine still a little bit less, but mostly doing both actually. So mostly multiple drugs, not like just one drug. Mostly cocaine and opiates.
With the Narcan, we don't get toxicology, so it's hard to know what.
So now I'm going to present the 2018 mortality and compare it with 2018 Narcan to see the trends. So there were 46 overdose deaths in Peoria County, which is a drop compared to last year, 22% drop. And of those, 35 were opioid related. So as you can see here, the month that had high Narcan reversals had lower mortality and vice versa. See, like in January, we had 10 deaths, but like we just started with the Narcan administration. Whereas in May, we had zero mortality, but very high Narcan administration. So it's like, I don't know if they're related or not, but like the month that had high Narcan reversals had low mortality. So like, you can see it all over. And here's the comparison by quarter. Really, there's like the only thing I noticed here is that first quarter had higher mortality, on the third quarter had higher Narcan overdoses, but there's not a lot of a relation between the two. Here is by age group. So the 30 to 39 is still the highest for Narcan reversals, but for mortality it was the 40 to 49. And like even the 30 to 39, 11 is still a big high number considering their age group. Here we see by gender, so males 65 for mortality, but only 58 for Narcan reversals. And by race, we see the difference. African Americans 1.6 compared to only 0.2 for their white counterparts, and for Narcan reversal, they were also high. And by zip code, the same zip codes actually, 03, 04, 05 had the high for both mortality and Narcan reversals, and also based on rate, 03 had the highest. 5.7 per 1,000 population. Any question?
We have data that goes back last summer. Like similar data to this, to the back in May, June, July, and August of last year. We have.
So this is all of 2018.
I can see the quarter.
I'm just talking about the months, and the reason being if we believe that like summer camp. Something to do. Are there other things coming up, June, July, August, September, and we need to be there saying folks, there's an alternative here. I don't know what those are, but the
mortality was the highest actually on January. The reversal were higher like early summer, but like the Narcan administration were higher in the summer, but the mortality was higher in January.
So you're saying look at specific dates to see if there's,
like if there's something
like
happening in events. Yeah.
Do you go back to the quarters that you had?
Yeah. So this is it. So yeah, third quarter, which is month, which is summer, had the highest Narcan reversal, 158. And the first quarter had the highest mortality.
Well, there's definitely a trend that the second and third quarter we have Narcan reversals.
Well, I mean, that's summer. I mean, working EMS, so I was trying to more people are outside, more people are partying, more recreational drug use. But I've got somebody that's working on a festival list for this area, down at Joel right now, to point out all of the dates. We've had problems getting into summer camp. We've tried for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And they just, we don't need you guys here. We've got AMT here. And we'd actually like to just dispense Narcan to consumers there. We've hit a roadblock every time we try to get in there. So, but we're looking at other smaller festivals around the area to target them.
Any more questions?
Who oversees that event?
Jim Holbert, who oversees summer camp.
Who owns the property?
That's Three Sisters. I'm not sure.
Was it the promoter, Chris, that wouldn't let you in? Or do you know,
what's that?
You know who would not allow you to be in there? Was it the promoter?
Every year they open up, like, non-for-profits can
yeah.
go, for, like, they open up, like, a booth space.
Yeah.
Right? And we've applied to have a booth space and they've denied us.
So really? It's just through, yeah, just through the website. I mean, I don't know who. I tried calling 1 year and I just got passed around from person to person to person.
You can do the non-profit ones for free
oh, cool.
and then they have
okay.
to try.
Who owns the property across the street?
I don't know.
By
the way, yeah. We could do like they do, we could just bury a bunch of Narcan on property.
Why not?
I wouldn't
right
be able to walk you in the back, Chris.
So I have actually had attendees pack up and take 20 kits, whatever, with them to take inside to give people.
It sounds crazy, and those two can speak to it more than I can, but you guys would be surprised at the number of people that don't want to stand our can at their events.
Well, does it convey, we have drugs here, good God, we have drugs here.
I would think the data is pretty compelling.
You could see it
and maybe
you
if you let us have our can, though, you would get the
next year.
They do hire our deputies and lieutenants to work off duty out there to somewhat manage security within the facility,
yeah.
along with Chile, but overall, Chillicothe has the jurisdiction.
Is that something you guys think you could say? Oh, it's really important for us that we have this partner here.
I think what's tough is when you get into the private entity, the person that's making the money, is we can offer our opinion, but if their viewpoint is it's thanks for the opinion, I don't
yeah.
know that we have any influence in that private sector piece.
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to what you guys mentioned, the potential image or what, I mean, I don't know the motivation, but that could very well be a piece of that.
Do they have food vendors out there?
Yeah.
I wonder if Boyd Seth was the place to get through. Look at the emergency center. Would they not have to stand, eliminate stand out front, but something not too far from that, that people could discreetly get up. And who says they're going to use it that day? Maybe they're going to use it a week
later. Are you ready to get a booth if you could get permission to say would you allow us to be in the parking area to just speak with the people that come in? That way
which one isn't a choice that you're going to travel to. If it's a dinner venue, you might attend that food at the parking lot.
We probably want to confer with the city fire and the city police to see whether or not calls for service really hit those. I'm just curious as to whether or not they're getting this type of response at those events, or is it more related to the summer and it's just an increase within the community? I'm curious myself.
Well, that's why I want to see the data.
Correct.
If there's days that it's spiked.
Oh, okay.
You're right.
So, Mohammed, what you're saying was, though, on that day, May 25th, they weren't from one zip code.
No,
they were
mini zip codes. But, like, I can look into that, actually, for next minute, to see if there's, in 2018, and should look all over, see if there's any special date that has, like, higher compared to others. Or I can look into that.
Well, there's certain kinds of music that
yes,
is attended by certain people who may be.
EDM music fest.
We can see if there were any festivals during that time.
Civic Center, concert, just.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of what's contributed to the day.
Have you guys reached out, Chris, to the Civic Center or any of their events?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know that I can identify a single response for an overdose at the Civic Center.
It's not one that we get.
No, not that we get. There's a smaller music fest circuit, EDM musicians, so it's just dubstep and DJs type stuff that meets rurally in various locations, and we've got a couple of people that attend those regularly that are going to start carrying our into those. They're not going to ask, they're just going to go. They're already going as participants, and they're just going to start carrying our can with them.
All right, come on, move into the next section of the presentation. So I've been approached to the use of ArcGIS in our NARCAN study. So this way we can, Mr. NARCAN can use, there's something called NARCAN Administrator Reporter, which is NARCAN Deployment Reporter, which you can, once you apply Mr. NARCAN, you can just use your phone for write down the information and it will send it right to us without having the middleman. And also, there's an application used by Naperville, Illinois. So what they do is they're creating a map of opioid overdose, opioid death that all the public can see, which will be a really sophisticated thing to do for us. So I screenshot a couple of pictures. So here's the NARCAN deployment reporter, and you can edit it to you whatever you want. So they mentioned the name, administration, date, and like here down the location, so you don't have to like. We use zip codes, so it would be easier for us, but like if you want to use specific location, you can just on your phone use my current location and it will just give you the location for it. And if there's any comments and how is the subject saved and released or transported and what type of drug they were taking, so it's really sophisticated thing to use. But I already contacted our GIS manager in order to give me access to see how we can better utilize it. And there's also this. So this is the opioid response dashboard that I found in Naperville, and this is also the map of their overdose. And they have something called drug activity reports, which I don't know if we can use it or not. It's when civilians report drug activities. And this is their overdose. This is the total drug they drop. People give back to them. And this is the naloxone deployment, and this is the drug death.
I mean, can you edit it, or is it done?
This
one before you edit.
Yeah, you can edit it, yeah.
Well, and one of my questions is this group interested in knowing where did they get it from? Where did they get the parking from? Is it important for you to know that?
You can edit it, actually. Yeah, you can do it, like whatever fits our needs. We don't have to go by the template they provided.
So you can customize additional categories.
Yeah, and you can remove categories too from the software. They say they don't recommend it, but like you can do it.
I see.
Yeah, I looked into their website, but I still didn't have the access, so I couldn't like try it myself, but you can do it actually with it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're looking for sources of where access.
And they have some information here that's irrelevant, so that's why I didn't screenshot those. So they have information like if somebody reported the, or like they called for an overdose or somebody else reported it. And like whether you want to type in the location or use the location services, and where did you give the medication, intramuscularly or orally, which I don't think this is matter. What matters to us is they were given Narcan by which agency, their age, their race, and their location.
What would we do if we knew where they got Narcan?
I don't know.
You guys, is it important to know that?
Yeah. And also, like I found that with also the drug activity reports, which I don't know if it's something that can be used or what it would help the community with, like,
the distributors here of major distributors of Narcan area, and that's HS Unity Place and Jolt. And those are partnered together anyway. I don't know.
Well, he's saying though, if it's more specific, if we know that there's a high rate of ministers that are giving out Narcan,
maybe we could look at it as places where we know where there's overdose deaths, and if there happens to also be a shortage of people with Narcan where there's the deaths, maybe we can move to get more Narcan places where there's the deaths. So not that we know where there's a lot, but we know where there's a little.
Yeah, you can get that. Yeah. You can create a map of Narcan deployments too, actually. Yeah.
We had also, Katie and I talked briefly about possibility of reporting where our MAP patients' zip codes are versus where this data overlaps. So if we don't have access for those people to get MAP services, but there's lots high rates of Narcan reversal and death in that area, then that may be a place to look at, well, how do we get that? Like, where is the gap there? So. But that would take us inputting that, like, oh, we've got 20 people with 61604, but we only have one center within that zip code that's easily accessible, those kinds of things.
Remind me, the data that's collected, is it where the person resides or where the person has a medical emergency? What is collected?
This data is where the reversal took place.
The reversal took place just on the.
Okay, so we don't know if somebody from 05 overdosed in 14.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, we do know, or yes,
we
do not. We do not know, no, because you have only the agency zip code, so the Peoria Fire zip code. It's not like where they did it, it's their zip code. And the same, of course, for the AMT and the Sheriff County and Police Department.
Looks like Methodist and NOSF have much higher zip code.
See, and what Mike just mentioned is very important to me.
Yes.
Because I want to know if someone from Canton overdosed here, they may not have even obtained or taken the substance here, may have originated outside of this county, outside of this area.
We know.
Reside outside of the area, I guess.
So we know actually if he is from outside the area, but like we don't know where we administer the Narcan to him. So we have people from Woodford County, Putnam County. I don't know if there's a county called Stark County, I never heard of it, but like there's a small county that came overdose here, but like we know that they are not from here, but like we don't know where they were given. So we just know the agency that gave it to them, but we don't know where they were given the Narcan.
With our data.
With our data.
Like this.
This you can see,
this is exactly
it uses exact location where it's given, and it creates a map by itself. Rather than going by like zip code, it goes by more specifically the area that it was in.
So this is essentially only going to be accurate and if all agencies use this.
Yeah.
Okay, so
there's
an issue also.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm going to talk about. So yeah, I already contacted our GIS manager to give access, and like also every agency is encouraged to do so too, to see where we can start, how we can better utilize it. It has a phone app, so it would be easier. We don't have to have the actual pro software. We have to have access to the 4.5, which is limited access. You don't have to have the full access. So the full access can be with the health department, and the others can have just access to the Narcan administration and to just fill the data with the administered Narcan. And also, we ask that each organization try to send their data 2 weeks prior to the next meeting, please. And if there's any updates on the high utilizer release of information.
Do we have an idea of the total amount of Narcan that's distributed? How much reports back do we get from people about its use?
1%.
Minimal.
1%?
Very minimal.
Oh, my. I was going to share this information with the group today, so I'll tell you. So you guys know that I oversee Unity Place's Drug Overdose Prevention Grant. Sue and Chris do the majority of the work in that grant. But when we started that grant, it was August 2017, so we're almost 2 years in, and we were approached by Super, kind of saying, hey, could you guys take a few counties? But a few counties turned into 40 counties, so slowly over time. So we oversee 40 counties in the state. We have a couple of partners to help us do that throughout the state. But as of yesterday, we distributed 9,047 kits and trained 11,815 people. Of those 9,000 kits that we've given out, I bet I've heard of not even 100.
We have 137 reports back.
Okay, but isn't that what the data is up here, is the reported reversals?
Yeah.
But not from Narcan that was distributed.
Only actually 4 pedestrians reported. In all the year, actually. I can look into pedestrians reporting. I didn't see a lot of them, but like, I can look into that more specifically. I saw some pedestrians.
You said
in
that the Narcan.
So this is provided by the hospital systems?
Gotcha. So that's what most of the data is. This is not data from primary consumers.
No.
No.
Or
right.
Secondary consumers.
And even down in Joel, where we see the primary consumers, we're not. They're just not reporting that.
The only bystander reports we get is if we happen to have somebody at the methadone or Suboxone clinic say, I need another kit, I used mine. And we're like, oh, wait, tell us about how you used it. But that's really it. So my hope for this app would be that we get more bystander reports because we could use it for that, right?
Yeah, you can use it
for
that, yeah.
That would be my hope for the app.
And I think that just having the location of where it was administered reduces barriers to reporting, because it would be great to know where everyone's from that's overdosing, but I don't know that they would want to disclose that potentially. I don't know if that would present a barrier.
Yeah. So target like the specific location where they're overdosing.
Right. Do you guys assume that they're being used and just not being reported on?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I've even simplified on the overdose reversal sheet. When I talk to individuals and train people, I've included at the bottom my personal cell number. Just take a picture of it and text it to me, even to simplify. Because people look at that form and go, I mean, most of them, I'm sure if they are using the Narcan, the rest of that is using.
Well, we get a ton of times where people are picking up Narcan and they're not the ones keeping it, right? So
yeah.
We give you 5 kits, but those 5 kits have since traveled who knows where. And so us saying to them, like, please report overdose reversals is long gone, right?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I think an example in our day-to-day life, a physician gives you a medicine for something, and what's a report about? What motivates you to give them some feedback about it?
And if it went.
You need a refill, okay.
If it went wrong.
Side effect. I think it's easy for me to report, right?
If you say, gee, I'll give you $5 if you give it back. And I'm not suggesting we incentivize people to pay them to give us a report back, but what motivates people to participate in stuff like this? It's not critical to them. I used it, my buddy's okay, who cares? How do we get people to give us data to help it? I'm trying to think of a parallel for in our day-to-day lives, and I can't think of one. When somebody calls me on the phone and goes, oh, I'm from Gozo Pharmaceutical Company, and we see that you were prescribed this, tell me what you think. Well, I ate potato salad and made me sick. somebody's calling me and actively soliciting me. And I think you guys are saying you do that, you're going to drive people away. They're going to be, why do you want to know all this?
I just try to explain to individuals, anybody that I sit down and train or talk to about this, look, it's really important that we get that information back so that we can focus better in on these areas that need more help with substance abuse and mental health issues. That and to sustain programs such as this to connect people, not just to Narcan, but other resources as well. That sometimes is helpful, but sometimes that's not even on the scale.
What information do we get to from primary consumers who are trying to get in their hands? What's the best way to get it in their hands and their friends' hands? Do we ask primary consumers? And what do they suggest you do?
To get Narcan in the hands of, just give it to me and I'll take it to them. That's their, I mean, not me, but as a consumer comes in and says, can I have a few extra kits, my friends.
I was thinking just in an obscure way. This is ultimate harm reduction to me if the dealers were handed out.
Mm-hmm.
We have some of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
We've provided to dealers.
Yep.
You struggled with that morally, but you're like, meh.
I'm at the point in the back of my car, I'm equipped with Narcan, test strips. Walmart has donated some of the medication, the gel packs that will dissolve unused medications and that. And that just all comes in as a whole at some instances. Mobile office.
And we're still waiting also on the high utilizer release of information. We still don't know how to start from that.
We talked about having each organization that intercepts the individuals have them sign their respective release of information so that Elizabeth can contact them. And then I don't know if anyone thought any more about that and whether or not that would be feasible. As far as, I don't know, Elizabeth would be able to reach out to them and see what the reason is, the underlying rationale for them utilizing these resources, and try to get them connected with services in the community. Do we think that that's the best approach to start, at least, or does anyone have any other ideas?
So there is something I've read that we can create an alert for the high utilizer when they call AMT or fire department or the OSF or Unity. So when they get admitted, we know that these are high utilizers. But I don't know this, how the specifics will go with that based on privacy information or HIPAA violation, but like I read it in the state of New York, actually they did that. So they created an alert so they would know that this is a high utilizer that's coming in, so they would know how to deal and how to connect them to the appropriate services rather than just getting them in the ED and then sending them back home.
Okay, what would you say to a consumer the basis is someone's going to follow up with them? They have this kind of paranoia of, why do you want to know this? Mm-hmm. What would it be the basis that you would say to somebody that they go, well, that's cool?
As far as like, if you're, so say I'm a purifier. This person contacts me frequently, and then I'm interacting with them to try to get them to sign the release to allow Elizabeth to contact them. Is that what you're?
Well, I want to know what would that first responder say to the primary consumers, the basis for the follow-up contact. They want to know, why do you want to talk to me? Why do you want information from me?
What's your motive?
I think, we'd want to let them know that we're trying to meet their needs in the best way possible, and that, you know, continuing to go to the ED is not really, you know, addressing the underlying issue. You know, say it's Rowling mentioned that there's someone that calls them to get them, take them downtown just to get food from a food pantry. And so I would say, you know, there are better ways that we could, you know, get you transportation and get you where you need to go so you don't have to call the ambulance every time you need food. So why don't we look into some other ways that we could go about doing that? I have the social worker at the health department that I could put you in contact with, and she could help you formulate a better plan or something.
Are you guys out in the field? Would that work? Could they buy it?
Probably not a large percentage. At least in my experience, what do you say?
Is that a real quick contact?
And it has to be like in a timely manner, because if once that person, you part from that person, as long as they obtain their purpose, everything else after that is.
Yeah, so we've got some outreach workers down in Joel. We've also got strategic partnerships with, I don't know, the Phoenix Community Development now, Southside Office of Concern, Center for Prevention of Abuse, and they both have outreach teams as well. So if somebody comes into Joel or I encounter someone on the street that is experiencing homelessness, I can call Darcy right away from Southside Office of Concern, and she will put me in contact immediately with a caseworker that can come out and meet with that person. So it's that immediate contact, I think, is what's important. If I just give them a card and said, hey, follow up with Darcy tomorrow,
it needs to be a warm handoff.
It needs to be a warm handoff. But then you got to have some kind of system after hours, too, that can help facilitate that.
Well, I think we got to convince people that their needs aren't being met. I think probably the folks think their needs are getting met, right? I mean, they don't, like, we have an agenda that we know there's a better way and there's a more fiscally responsible way, but I don't know that the consumer cares. That they think their needs aren't getting met.
And sometimes their need may not be met. We may not have infrastructure or systems in place to meet that need, and then that's a problem. It may be a conversation to how do we meet that need, and clearly there's a gap in that, but I think that may be what we face, is that there's a need and there's no one here currently meeting it. Like, there's no one who does food delivery to people who can't get out and access a food pantry. That's not a thing that's offered.
Grubhub
for food pantry. DoorDash, and they drop your canned goods on the steps. But so it does take someone being creative. I mean, these people are resourceful. That's
right.
Obvious. But yeah, I don't know that we know what questions we're asking yet.
And we did also discuss not at that intercept where, not waiting until they're calling EMS for that ride, having someone from EMS that has a rapport with them going out and saying, we've seen that, or we know that it's an issue for you to find transportation, and we found this contact. Would it be okay if she reached out to you to discuss some other options?
I had a quick question. When someone is released from the jail and they have a known substance use history, are they given Narcan upon release?
Yep. Our kids that we provided to the jail.
So, like, for those who ask.
And there's actually 5 other counties that participate in that as well.
So as they're going out the door, if they go out and use that day because they haven't used it in a few weeks, then.
Did you have anything else, Chrissy?
Anybody, last time we were talking about how we do the drug overdose prevention grant. We've had it for almost 2 years now, and so we've had a ton of success. So I don't know what people are interested in necessarily, but like I said, we've trained over 11,000 people in 2 years and given about 9,000 kits in 2 years. We, if you name a place, we have probably asked them. We have probably asked them if they want Narcan. If they said no, we've made them take it anyway. These guys have done all the work. Listen, they really have. They've been all over the state calling anybody that will listen. Has anybody noticed our marketing lately? We have some billboards out.
Yeah.
We got some CityLink buses with our stuff on it.
Let me ask you a question. Do you guys also, when you're talking about being able to get into these different festivals, have you reached out to my community events? So I know a couple times a year, Carver Center will do a health fair.
We are part of a lot of those events. We were just down to do Celebration Martin Luther King. I have about 16 Narcan kids down there.
How many?
60.
And the LGBT community.
Yeah, we'll be at Pride Fest as well, picnic. And so a lot of these different community events we try to get into. And if we're not in one and we hear about one, we will be at the next one. So we'll reach out and make that contact.
Yeah, the downside now of the grant is really that there's just the two of them covering locally. And so it's like if we're not free on a Saturday, then we try to give them Narcan or something to help out, but we can't be at a table.
So that's why we try to train the trainer in some of these communities and equip them, give them the training and the education and equip them with the actual Narcan so that they can sustain in their demographic areas at events even such as, you know, a health fair or whatever it might be. That's part of it too.
I don't want to put you guys on the spot, but since we have the, we have the group listening. We're 2 years into this. You guys have had a ton of success. What are you still struggling with?
Stigma.
Are there places that you're trying to get in that you can't?
Yes.
Jails.
Huh?
So, I mean, we've had some success in festivals and jails.
I know hospitals has been a big one that you guys are really trying to figure out.
Our critical areas with law enforcement and also connection with, like, emergency departments. There's a huge barrier still within all of that, and it's not so much just because of individuals. Some of that exists still, yes, but there's a lot of red tape and rules, laws, what have you, restricting some of that from happening. But there's still a lot of people that individuals, community members, leaders, law enforcement, every level, that still don't fully understand addiction, especially when we talk about opioids and that. There's still a lot of stigma. I cover a lot of rural areas, and it's still a huge pushback. Oh, that's not happening here. You only have an alcohol problem. And of course, there's still a lot of lack of resources to boot, so it kind of, you know, when you connect with some of these areas, that's some of the what's voiced as their worries, their concerns. Well, we don't have, you know, you want to set up a safe passages program with a police department. How are you going to get a provider to commit to that that are already maxed and have waiting lists? There's so many obstacles at so many levels with this. It's crazy. So you just keep going. I don't take no for an answer very well, so I just try to keep pushing. Mm-hmm. And bring the facts. That's what's important. And people read stuff on Facebook and hear on the news a lot of misinformation, and they take that and swallow it. So, when one of us says something different, they're like, careful. Where'd you get that info at? There's still a lot to a lot of barriers. And even with Narcan, there's stigma attached to it. You're condoning drug use. So there's a lot to it. Not just as easy as going out and, oh, here, sign this, take this Narcan, bye, and get writing down numbers. I mean, there's a lot to it.
We have to convince them to let us be there first.
Yeah.
Are there questions from anybody about the project? I mean, you guys know how to get a hold of me, I guess, by this point.
Thanks for the info.
Yeah, they're doing some cool stuff.
Yeah. I think almost everyone at the health department's been trained.
I think so.
Yeah. Continue to be thinking about the high utilizer matrix and the possibilities of using the GIS and whether or not you think that will be an effective way to capture this data and have it available for the community. I think it's great that we're, you know, collecting this and we're knowledgeable about where these things are taking place so we can target interventions, but I think it'd also be great for the community to have that real-time data. you know, if they knew on the 25th, oh, four people just overdosed down in the O3, like, maybe we should go get some fentanyl testers from Chris and see what's going on. Maybe that could have prevented some of that. So so I think there's some excellent possibilities there. But yeah, whether or not it's feasible for everyone to submit their data that way and be capturing it, just something to think about. So,
is this ARC? Okay, so I have a Samsung product. What is the actual used?
So the one I'm gonna use is the one you've surveyed.
Okay.
Go up a little bit. This one.
Survey 123.
Yeah, this is the one that has the Narcan deformation.
Okay.
And we still have to get the access to in order to know how much we can do with it.
Right.
So there's two versions. There's the pro version, which is the one that should be the one who creates the data, and the like the simple version, but not pro, which is anybody can input data to it.
Okay.
And if you open access, even the public can then enter, use the naloxone deployment reporter and enter their own data.
Okay.
And I know Mohammed mentioned it briefly, but we are asking for people to submit data 2 weeks prior to the meeting. I don't think anyone here actually is responsible for data submission, but if you could spread the word. In the past, we've had it be just 1 week prior to when we meet, so like last Tuesday. But then when no one sends it on Tuesday, we send emails out on Wednesday saying, please send your data to us. And then they go, oh, shoot, I forgot. I'll get it to you by the end of the week. And so then we have yesterday to then get
that,
all the data and everything. So it could be, you know, we could do a lot more with it if we had more time. So we're asking for data to be submitted 2 weeks in advance so that maybe we actually have it 1 week in advance.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll just reiterate that in the notes when we send this out to you. All right. Well, thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a good Tuesday.